I'm Marty Moscowen from WHYY in Philadelphia.
And I'm Mina Kim from KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to America Amplified, life, community, and COVID-19. We're teaming up with public radio stations across the country to talk about how life has changed because of the pandemic.
This hour, we're talking about how this public health crisis has created an economic crisis that's reaching rates not seen since the Great Depression. As of this Thursday, 36 million people have applied for unemployment benefits, largely because of the pandemic. Put another way, almost 20% of adults have lost their jobs or had their hours cut. If that's you, we want to hear how you are coping. Tweet us at Amplified2020. While job losses are being felt in just about every community across the country, women and people of color who tend to have low-wage jobs in things like retail, hotels, and restaurants have been the hardest hit. Just to underscore that point, 39% of low-income workers making $40,000 or less lost their jobs in March, and that's according to the Federal Reserve. Joining us is Bill Rogers. He's chief economist at the Heldrick Center for Workforce Development at Rutgers University in New Jersey. He's also a senior research affiliate of the National Poverty Center at the University of Michigan, and he serves on New Jersey Governor Murphy's Restart and Recovery Commission. And Bill Rogers, nice to have you with us on the show.
Thank you for having me, and wish it was on a much more positive and uplifting situations. But
absolutely, but here we are, and this is such a critical issue. And I want to have you kind of set the stage or set the scene for us. Have we ever faced on this global scale an economic crisis that's driven by a public health crisis?
During my lifetime, no, right? I mean, this has been truly unprecedented. And I think Dr. Fauci and the other public health scientists have got it right. And I'm grateful that our governor here in New Jersey, Governor Phil Murphy, understands that economic growth is really hinges upon us getting and addressing this public health crisis, that we can't go forward until we really address the public health crisis.
I remember back in 2008, it was called a man's session. I don't know if that was exactly true or not. But this is a different kind of recession, or maybe even depression, affecting more women, more people of color. Why is that?
Yeah, this what we're seeing right now is unfortunately a story or a tale that is told in every recession, whether it be the Great Recession from 2007-2008, whether it be the recession from 1981-1982. And I remember starting grad school in the late 80s and 90s, and that was the 1981-82 recession. That was my benchmark for how bad it could get. And little did I know, over my lifetime, I would have two of the worst, downturns: the Great Recession and now. What is amazing about this period is that because the policy response was we really have to turn the economy down or move it down to barely one gear, being in one gear, that it just stopped and brought consumption, which is 2/3 of national income, to a grinding halt. And people are very, very fearful. People are very, very concerned about the safety of work and also the safety to consume.
Well, we're learning who can work at home. I'm one of those people. I'm sure you're one of those people as well. But what we're seeing are people who do work in restaurants and do work in hospitality and do have that kind of person-to-person, face-to-face, high-touch jobs. They're the ones that have really are losing their jobs, but they're also the ones that seem at higher risk for contracting the virus.
That's right. That women, minorities, people of color, some of the reasons why in the past that this being hurt more occurs is because, particularly on the economic side, many of these more vulnerable groups have had difficulty getting education that allows them to be competitive in the workplace, getting into the job market, maintaining and getting experience commensurate to their white male peers. And then another big vestige of why we're seeing these differential effects is wealth. Wealth wealth creates, right? Wealth, as Gordon Gekko said in Wall Street, but wealth allows, particularly for families, right? That the home is the biggest asset that they will ever hold, most likely. And it allows you to, it provides you the opportunity to possibly create a small business for, you know, providing collateral, but also wealth and these other measures of what would allow you to compete in the labor market or in the economy, they also are affected to health, right? People who have less education have lower health outcomes or even access to health. And so the groups that you refer to, they're facing a double whammy. Right, they're facing a double whammy on the health side of things, and they're facing a double whammy on the economic side.
I saw a headline: "When White America catches a cold, Black America catches pneumonia." Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, yes. Or another one of my colleagues talks about African Americans or people of color being on the caboose. Right. And what's so chilling about this expansion that the president really likes to tout, and I don't mean to be political here or partisan, but he talks about how this has been such a great expansion prior to COVID. Well, in New Jersey, our United Way here has created a concept called ALICE, where ALICE stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, and Employed. And it's basically those families or households who are in poverty, but it also includes families who are above the poverty line as defined by the government. But the problem is they don't have enough income or resources to be able to afford where they're living. So they have difficulty with having good housing for their families, being able to put good food on the table for their children. And so what has happened in New Jersey, when we started doing this report back in 2010, right after the Great Recession, we had about 33% of our households were classified as ALICE. And in New Jersey, in Pennsylvania, across the border, that's roughly around 37%. Well, you would expect in the greatest economy, you'd expect ALICE to go down. But actually, ALICE grew during this expansion. And so another problem with why the groups that you're referring to have had difficulty is because they also went into this COVID-19 scare or this crisis in much unhealthier economic terms.
And Bill Rogers, this is Mina Kim at KQED. And speaking of numbers masking realities, I'm curious about whether or not you think that very high unemployment rate as a result of the April numbers, now at 14.7%, is an accurate number, is an accurate picture of unemployment.
Sure. When I always get this question, I always like to just preface it and say, I love my colleagues who work at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They are awesome federal workers. So what I'm about to say is not an indictment of their work. When you define unemployment as, are you searching, right? Those numbers are accurate. But what's happened now is by turning the economy down, you have to look at other measures that BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, puts together, such as the share of the population that's got a job. We call that the employment population ratio, but the share who have the job, of the population have a job, and that has fallen dramatically. And why is that important? Because that latter measure captures people who've stopped working, who stopped searching for a job. Right. That people will say, if you ask them, like in the last survey, are you looking for a job? Many will say no. Why? Because there aren't any jobs. The economy is not open. And then if this persists longer, you can get what's called the discouraged worker effect, that people are going to start to say, well, I don't trust that my company or the company that wants me to work for them has the proper PPE and a proper protocol for bringing me back. And so they also still say in the future surveys, I'm not actually searching or I'm not employed.
Bill, let me ask you about another type of worker. These are gig workers, independent contractors, you know, tend to have jobs that are built around projects, for instance. Where has this economic crisis left them?
Well, it has left them also another level of thinking about facing a double whammy, too, is that many people who work in the gig economy, and there's debate about the size of the gig economy, but I think people most agree now that it is a significant part of the workplace or workforce. One of the challenges people in the gig economy they face is their earnings bop around. So there's a lot of movement. But the bigger problem that many in the gig economy have also faced is access to health insurance and other kinds of benefits. And so, you know, for the last decade or so, we've been talking about or economists and policymakers have been talking about how do we help these types of workers. And fortunately, they did. Congress did, and the administration did finally act and put in place unemployment insurance for people who fit this category of workers. But the one sobering thing about it was, since these people had not been covered by unemployment insurance, it took several weeks for state governments to get their software up and running to be able to accept these workers. Meanwhile, yes, these are individuals who are still having bills they have to pay. So they are very vulnerable.
We have some
calls coming in, and I'd like to take one now if I could. Let me go to Kemper in Vallejo, California. Hi, Kemper. You're on America Amplified.
Howdy, thanks. You know, in this day and age, the key to getting employment is getting on the internet, generally. And for people who don't have internet at home, don't have HBO, don't have a lot of resources, don't have a lot of skills, they rely on the library, they rely on a public college, and they rely also on the Employment Development Department here in California, so-called unemployment, that has job postings, it has computers, it has phones, it has all those resources, and they're all locked up. So I'm in a position where I was just trying to replace my phone. It took me 3 weeks because I couldn't get online anywhere. The idea,
Kemper,
that an employment department, yes.
Yeah, you are raising such an important point about access. I mean, Bill Rogers, it sounds like Kemper, he's trying to get in. He's right. California has closed its physical offices, and so there's the digital divide issue. But on top of that, he's also, I think, underscoring what has been a long-time disinvestment in unemployment departments and in staff and technology.
Yeah, most definitely. When I was a resident of Virginia, taught at the College of William & Mary, we had one of our governor's candidates. He ran on a slogan for he was going to cut your car tax. And his way he was going to pay for it was basically raiding the UI Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund and resources going to it. And so what happened was we got into the Great Recession. Many of these states were unable to pay out benefits, but also we weren't investing in the infrastructure of not just even unemployment insurance, but even other aspects of the government. And so COVID is not...
Yep. Sure. No, hold on to that thought, only because we have to take a very short break. And we're talking about the unemployment fallout from the pandemic. And you can join the discussion. Tweet us at Amplified2020. We'll be right back. More conversation and more calls. This is America Amplified. Welcome back. I'm Marty Moscowen from WHYY in Philadelphia.
And I'm Mina Kim from KQED in San Francisco. This is America Amplified, life, community, and COVID-19. We're talking this hour about how this public health crisis has brought the economy to its knees, leaving more than 36 million people without a job. And wherever you are, we want to hear from you. Tweet us at Amplified2020. We're going to hear from a Philadelphia woman about what this experience has been like for her now. She lost her job nearly 2 months ago.
Hi, this is Marie Anglero. I live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I was laid off on March 20th. I filed for unemployment 2 days after that. You know, at first I was like, I didn't want to be insensitive to the situation. I know that people are like, you know, doing the best they can. But as the weeks started passing by and I still hadn't gotten any new information, I started getting very concerned. I called the unemployment office hundreds of times, but I just kept getting this recording saying that the call could not be completed. It was very disheartening. I have family in Puerto Rico. My mom filed around the same time that I did, and she also hasn't gotten her benefits yet, the stimulus check. Obviously, life goes on. My landlord is still demanding rent, like nothing's happening. My bills keep piling up. I have to buy food. It's the uncertainty of things, the level of anxiety that it gives you as a working person is very alarming. I can only just like, I just hope that I get that money soon so I can feel a sense of relief.
That audio diary came to us from our coordinating producer, Andrea Tudhope. And we want to hear from you. Did you become unemployed as a result of this pandemic? How are you managing?
And joining us now is Shonda Woods, who lives just outside of Philadelphia in Delaware County. She's the mother of two boys and just lost her job as a contractor with a home health company. She has worked as a realtor, also has worked as an Uber Lyft driver on the weekends. And Shonda Woods, nice to have you with us on America Amplified.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. This is a question I've been asking a lot of people over the last couple of months during the pandemic. How are you doing?
As well as to be expected. I'm now a full-time teacher. I'm still trying to garner clients, but for my real estate business, but it's going to be a little bit difficult with no one working. So it's going to be hard for people to get a mortgage. So I'm just up in the air, just across the board, other than being a full-time teacher.
You were working as a home health in a home health company. Do you expect to get your job back? Do you have any indication one way or the other?
I don't think so. Part of my job requirement was to go into hospitals and to senior centers and to speak to them to try to have them come on board as new clients. Unfortunately, since they're high risk and I have asthma, I don't see this working out with me having that position any longer. So I have to focus on my real estate business. And that's not going to be, it's not going to be easy to try to garner new clients when so many people have lost their jobs and sure. They may not, you know, have the ability to get a mortgage. So that leaves me with Uber and Lyft. And again, I have asthma, so I'm not going to have the ability to go out as often as I did before because I'm at risk.
Well, we heard this another woman from the Philadelphia area talking about the frustrations of being unemployed and the difficulty getting benefits. How about for you? Have you been able to get the benefits either from the feds or from the state?
Finally, this past Monday, I was able to receive the unemployment benefits. I did have questions on how they came up with the number that they did, because once the stimulus money runs out, it's barely anything to help out. But I can't find anyone on the phone who knows anything about the program.
I think you're not alone in that. I know there's a lot of frustration, and certainly in Pennsylvania, I know the state government is just overwhelmed with phone calls. One of the things I know that you have been on the lookout for, and I think others should as well, which are scams. And there are people who will take advantage of difficult circumstances. Have you had experience with that?
Yes, I have. I've actually been on every job board, and Indeed will all actually pull those jobs when they find out that, you know, it was a scam and they were trying to get additional information on people. But other job boards don't actually pull and notify you. I don't know if they check up on whether or not a job prospect is actually a good one or not. But Indeed, they do let you know that this has been pulled because there's been concerns as to the validity of the job itself. I have had outreach where people say, oh, we'll pay you for training. That's cool. I have my master's. I have my BA. I don't need to go to school anymore. I'm a licensed realtor. I've done enough school. So I don't need that.
You've done enough school. You've had enough jobs. You've got a lot of experience. And I'm certainly hoping when things get back that you will be able to be employed, because we need you in the workforce. You also have two sons who I'm assuming are working from home or taking classes from home. How are they doing?
My oldest, I kind of want to strangle him. It's his senior year. So you know how it is with teenage boys.
Yeah, I do.
They'd rather focus on what they want to focus on. I'm like, you have 2 weeks, get this project done. Actually, his school, he goes to a private school because he has mixed expressive and receptive language disorder along with memory issues. So he's disabled. Mm-hmm. His school is actually going to drop off his cap and gown to him. Like, they're coming tomorrow to every student. It's a very small school. The school has about 25 students in the entire school. So they're going to drop off the cap and gowns, and then they're going to come back around on the day that should have been their graduation and take pictures with the staff.
Oh,
the
that's great. Oh, that's great. And your younger son, how's he doing?
My youngest son, his educational experience is a little bit easier. We were able to get a laptop for him. And initially, it wasn't exactly streamlined. They used one app and then another app, and it was just all over the place until the school district stepped in and they said, you know what, let's streamline it a little bit better. So it's been much easier. He's advanced. So he's kind of ahead of the class with turning his work in. So it's been easier now that they've gotten the program together.
Oh, that's good. Good for him.
And Shonda, you
sounds like Mina wants to ask you something. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
Mina.
This is Mina from KQED. It sounds like you were saying that you don't think your job will be there when this is over. And I'm just wondering if you're already thinking about what kind of job then you want to pursue or try to pursue that will be there.
Ideally, my whole purpose to being out in the workforce was to help families. That's why I was in home health care. That's why I am in real estate. And that's why I am in Uber and Lyft. But unfortunately, it looks like my idea of helping people has changed. It has to. I can't meet people face to face as often as I'd like to, because I'm not going to be able to do Uber and Lyft like that due to my health condition. So, I mean, at this point, as long as I'm out there helping people, I'd love for my real estate business to pick up. But again, it's contingent upon the financial status of people who are trying to purchase homes. So since 1/3 of our population has been tanked, essentially, I'm going to have a difficult time helping families obtain the dream homes that they wanted. So I'm literally up in the air at this point.
Absolutely. Shonda, a final question to you. I mean, if you could advise our leaders, our government leaders, our economists, what would you tell them?
This is worse than 2008. And it's not even as long term as it was with the crash back then. I actually purchased a home in 2008, and then I purchased one recently. So anytime I buy a home, I think I need to look at the market. but when it comes down to helping people, please stop looking at other countries. Because I watched the House vote yesterday, and so many people were concerned about China, China this, China that. We're not in China. We're here. We have people struggling. We have people who need help, who's going to need help. Because even when the economy opens back up, like my jobs, they're not going to have the strength they had before the economy shut down. So it's going to be difficult for people to bounce back. You have to give people support in order to at least maintain the status of living, of having a house, of having renting a place, or we're going to be in a worse situation than we were back in 2008.
Well, Shonda Woods, I really appreciate you joining us today on America Amplified, telling us a bit about your life. You're someone who needs to get back to work. We want you to get back to work, and
yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Shonda, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much. It was so great to hear from you, and so great to see all these calls coming in. Let me go next to Arkady in San Francisco. Hi. Arkady, join us.
Oh, hi. Hi, thank you. So on one side, we have restaurants, hospitality workers that have been destroyed by these draconian measures without having any say in it. And on the other side, at least in San Francisco, we have people who are fully employed in software and related industries. So when we see these placards that say that we are in this together, we're not in this together. So we have to keep that in mind and do something about it and take appropriate measures. Thank you.
Arkady, I really appreciate that, and I will let that stand. I'm going to go next to Bruce in Winter Park, Florida. Hi, Bruce.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well. Join us. You're on America Amplified.
Well, I'm in an industry that's going to be shut down probably, we all think, for certainly the rest of 2020 and potentially into 2021. I work in the corporate meeting and event industry, and we don't anticipate large groups of people wanting to gather to have a meeting or a conference anytime soon. And although a lot of us have gotten PPP money, which was a great stopgap for a couple of months, I'm in Florida, so my unemployment situation here is not a very good one to look forward to. But a lot of people from large companies and individual gig workers in this industry are going to be without work for a long period of time, we believe, And I'm not sure our society or our federal government system or state governments are ready to try to support those people going long term.
Bruce, thanks for sharing that. And it makes me think, Bill Rogers, of how many jobs that people have lost will actually be there. There's been this question of whether or not people who are unemployed now believe that their situation is temporary or permanent. Is there any way of knowing what portion of these losses will be permanent?
Bill Rogers. Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Sure. Yeah, unfortunately, we really don't know at this stage. You have on one hand the administration that is very hopeful that it's going to be a V-shaped recovery, that we're going to bounce back real quickly. But yesterday I was in one of my subcommittee meetings on our commission here in New Jersey, and we were talking about the economists were talking about some of their projections. And I think the general consensus with us was this is going to be more like that Nike swoosh. That's going to be a long and slow recovery. And so what I would say to Arkady, what I would say to Shonda, you know, is that, yes, you want to, if you're looking online and using technology to find jobs, that's great. But I think we've seen the challenges that's been creating for us. But ultimately, what many of us have found that the ultimate way for getting jobs is right now is kind of environment, you got to activate your personal networks, activate those family networks, activate those colleagues who you haven't talked with, and just, you know, getting your name out there and saying that I'm open to opportunity. And I think also what I loved about what Shonda said was she's driven by a personal mission. Yeah. As opposed to the specific job. And so she's going to do well, I think, as we recover, because she has this personal mission that she wants to help people, and there's lots of ways we can help people.
Bill, let me get Lee from Louisville, Kentucky, to join our conversation. And Lee, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, I just wanted to give a word of encouragement to people who have been unemployed for years before COVID-19. I got a job offer just when everything shut down, but I have help, and it's little by little, one step at a time, and hopefully I'll have a job soon, hopefully.
Well, I appreciate that optimism, Lee, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Bill, kind of picking up on what you said there, which is, and it's easy just to feel as if this is hopeless and we don't know how it's going to end, but there have to be things that people can do to prepare for whatever kind of country and economy we have when we get to the other side of this.
I think, and number one is really reaching out to your members of Congress. They still take those little tick marks where so-and-so calls in and says, you know, we're in favor of this particular legislation that's being considered, or really amplifying public opinion and expressing these concerns that people are saying, because right now you have the Senate, they're not coming back to Congress and to D.C. until June. And the HEROES Act was just passed yesterday, and maybe that's not the perfect bill, but something needs to be done sooner than later to help provide that bridge to recovery and reform that your callers and many Americans are wanting and just as deservedly need.
Yeah, and you're listening to America Amplified. That's Bill Rogers, chief economist at the Heldrick Center for Workforce Development at Rutgers University. I'm Marty Moscoane here in Philadelphia.
And I'm Mina Kim from KQED, and we're talking about the personal realities behind the staggering unemployment numbers. And if you want to join the discussion, tweet us at Amplified2020. And let me go next to Jennifer in Fort Worth, Texas. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
I actually have been furloughed. And I work in like an event industry type job. And so my job is kind of up in the air at the moment. But I actually also contracted the virus. So it's been kind of a double whammy as far as like being sick and, you know, trying to kind of look for a job.
I'm sorry to hear that, Jennifer.
You know, because you have to look for a job while you're, you know, unemployed, even though my job is technically waiting for me, you know, but I also don't know that it's waiting for me until all of this is over. So it's just kind of an unsure time. So,
How are you coping with all that, Jennifer? I mean, how are you managing through that? That's a lot.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy. Just mainly trying to stay well, and taking it day by day. But you know, it's moment by moment sometimes, because if I think about it too far in the future, it kind of makes me a little anxious, because we don't really know, you know, what it's going to be in a month from now, or, you know, some people I know are not even going to be in their office until, you know, the end of the year. One of my friends, she said that in their office, they're not going to be back in until, you know, probably December, which is a little unnerving for me, because, you know, my unemployment runs out in September.
Well, Jennifer, thank you for sharing your story, and we're thinking about you here. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. And we are talking about the crisis of unemployment because of the pandemic. And you're listening to America Amplified. Tweet us at Amplified2020. We have more coming up after this short break. We will continue our conversation with Bill Rogers. And we want to hear from you. We'll be right back. This is America Amplified.
Welcome back. I'm Mina Kim from KQED in San Francisco.
And I'm Marty Moss-Cohen from WHYY in Philadelphia. This is America Amplified Life, Community, and COVID-19. We're talking this hour about the personal realities behind these staggering unemployment numbers. There's still time for you to join the conversation. How are you coping with the stresses of unemployment? Do you think you'll get your old job back? Are you training for a new and perhaps different kind of job? Tweet us at Amplified2020.
We're joined now by Miguel Velasco. He's Workforce Development Program Manager at MEDA, Mission Economic Development Agency, that's in San Francisco, and it's committed to supporting and strengthening low and moderate income Latino families. Miguel Velasco, welcome to America Amplified.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So you try to help and place those who are unemployed in new jobs. Miguel, how big an increase have you had in the number of clients that you're trying to place?
It's been a pretty big increase since the last 8 weeks. So far, our services have touched at least 1,000 new clients looking for different services, but especially during this workforce need, a lot of our community, especially women, which is at 70-30 ratio in the
wow.
number of clients that we serve. And they have been the most impactful on the during the pandemic. All of this, our community work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What industries do those women tend to be in?
Yeah. So oftentimes there's hospitality, which includes back of the house, janitors. We have a lot of daycares as well. People that take care of kids privately with private families, they just stop going to work because one, they can, they can spread the virus to the families, or they can get sick. And, it's really heartbreaking because it's taking a toll on our community here in the Mission District in San Francisco.
How hard has it been to place the workers coming to you?
It's really, really hard right now. So, pretty much what we're doing right now, we have a list of employers that we work with as a, partners of Meta. So they pretty much have stopped hiring everybody unless they are in the supermarket, they're home care providers as well. So caregivers are per se booming right now. So those are two of the industries that we're placing people, but overall, we used to place probably over 80% of the people that we worked with before. Right now, it's probably 10-15% wow. of the clients that we can place. So, it's really complicated situation.
Miguel, this is Marty in Philadelphia. So, how are people coping? How are they surviving with so little income coming in?
Yeah, so we serve like people that can apply for regular unemployment and a stimulus check, but we also serve community that don't get access to those, those checks, unemployment benefits. So oftentimes they have to borrow money from, from a friend, or they have to go to food pantries. They have to apply for certain grants that some partner organizations here locally are giving away money for the community. And it's complicated because it goes to a list, and sometimes, they get a call with, you're going to get $500 or whatnot, but it's uncertain. We don't know if they're going to get the help that they need, because they need help right now. They haven't worked in 8 weeks. So most of our community don't have savings, because San Francisco, I think, is the second most expensive city in the U.S. So you can imagine what our community is going through.
Absolutely.
And Miguel, earlier we heard a caller talking about digital issues. I mean, have folks been able to apply for assistance, for unemployment assistance? Because I'm sure that's a big part of what you're trying to help people access, right?
Correct. So part of our strategy work at Meta, it's like helping people, apply for EDD or different type of grant. The problem is, like most of our community, they just relied on a cell phone for a family of 5, 6. So they don't have a computer at home. They don't have internet, which some of us probably would take for granted. We're just connected to a Wi-Fi. But for them, sometimes they have to go to a library or, a hotspot in case that they don't have data. So it's really complicated. And on top of that, there are not a lot of people with computers. They need to put food on the table, so they pretty much rely on libraries or the school sites, with are closed right now, and with the whole year is going to be shut down. So we're just waiting on that. We need to see when they reopen.
And Miguel, I know some of the people coming to you are undocumented. What do you think we need to understand about how they're affected by all this, and how it complicates your ability to place them as well?
So, it gets double the problems. I mean, oftentimes we can help people, with unemployment, like I said, but they don't have access to any of that. So we help everybody that walks into our doors. So pretty much we just, help them with resumes and cover letters and in interviews, and we do that. So oftentimes our community, they're just waiting to go back to the jobs that they had. Because they know, if they don't have documentation, which is something that we don't ask, we don't really mind. They just waiting to go back to their jobs. So it's really difficult. I think it takes a higher degree of problems to place those individuals.
Miguel Velasco, he is Workforce Development Program Manager at Meta, Mission Economic Development Agency in San Francisco. Thanks so much for the work that you do.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Miguel. And you're listening to America Amplified. We are talking about the staggering unemployment numbers because of the pandemic, and hearing from people across the country about how they are coping, how they are surviving. Bill Rogers with us, Chief Economist at the Heldrick Center for Workforce Development at Rutgers University. Let's get, I got to get my little guy there. Let's get Don from San Francisco to join us. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Wow. This is something I've never seen before in my life, and I've lived a little while. But this is the first time that you're ever going to be able to count people that have dropped out of the workforce but found a way back in to make money as independent contractors. So now you're going to have the data to count them, and a lot of them are going to be people of color. So now you're going to get a real accurate look at how many people, the percentage of population of color are unemployed. And when they open this thing back up, you're going to see a V-shape. But it's unfortunately going to be a V-shape in unemployment for all of the isms that are going to jump into place, because they made one faulty move in their plan, bad plan, made one move that brought this economy to this place.
And what was that move?
And that was giving people stimulus. giving these companies money. They should have given the state block grants, COBRA block grants. Then the states could have kept the businesses open. People would have been employed. They'd be keeping their health care. The business would still have a semblance of revenue or one of their greatest expenses, a lead, but their workforce would still be in place. So that when you do open up, people still have jobs because the businesses were supported, and that includes the cities and the counties. It was just, but instead what we saw is we saw a whole bunch of rich people get richer, and this happens about every 10 years. I was expecting it.
Well, you know what, Don? Yeah, let me just jump in here only because you put a lot of stuff on the table, and I want to give Bill Rogers a chance to weigh in on that. And Don has an different idea about how money should have been spent. It sounds more like what was done in Germany, which was try to give money to companies so they could at least hold on to their workers until getting to the other side of the pandemic. What do you think?
Our public policy is one of incrementalism, and I don't, and I'm not one. I don't like it at all. And what we've, and the incrementalism that occurred here was, well, let's do this, the triple PP program for the paychecks. Let's provide they called it a stimulus check, $1,200. But it took a long time, way too long, much too long to get that stuff in play. And so the relief efforts have been very, very weak. There's the new HEROES Act is trying to pick up. The Democrats are trying to pick up a lot of the sort of people that fell through the cracks. And when I talk about doing these type of approaches with my students, we talk about the three T's. Is it timely? Is it targeted? Is it temporary? And we're having difficulty on the timely and the targeted piece in terms of providing relief to people. I thought Don was going to talk about the tax cuts that went to corporations at the beginning of the Trump administration, because I find problem with those, because we've gone into this period of time right now where we started off with a $1 to $2 trillion budget deficit, and now it's going to be even much larger because we're adding on, and we also hadn't done the investments in the appropriate social infrastructure that I think Don is alluding to where we could be doing direct payments to people as opposed to going through businesses. I mean, he just said he threw a lot on the table, and
he sure
did. And I think the last part of what he's also talked about is when we had the Great Depression, we talked about the three R's: relief, recovery, and reform. And what I heard a lot in Don's comments, too, is the third R, that we need to have reform and serious reform such that we have an inclusive recovery, and that we also, as we move forward, we address the gender pay gaps that have been existing for generations. We address racial discrimination that has been also activated, not so much this time towards blacks, but towards Chinese individuals, right? There has to be a major, major reform conversation around how we work, where we work, when we work, and with whom we work.
That's Bill Rogers, again, chief economist at the Heldrick Center for Workforce Development at Rutgers University. Let me see what Lisa from Fort Worth, Texas has to say. And Lisa, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you for having this program for us.
Absolutely.
To talk about what we could be doing. I'm in the airline industry, and as all of us know, hospitality, leisure industry is just about the worst hit.
Yeah.
And I know I don't have all the figures and numbers. I'm not the number cruncher in my place of work, but my heart bleeds. We've got stimulus money. It's keeping some of us on the payroll. This industry, however, is going to tank if people don't get over their ick factor, I guess, of flying again. And I have to say, among my mates at work still, there is a very, very low incident of COVID infection, and I suspect, you know, passing through the airport, I see less people than I do when I go to Costco, for instance. So just a comment about our industry, the trouble that it's in, and any thoughts about how to keep us all going until we all are more optimistic.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate the call, Lisa. And Bill, I think it gets to this whole, she called it the ick factor, but if people are going to have confidence going forward that they can be safe while they're out working, for instance.
Who called in when I heard her, I mean, her commentary, it was all about consumption and getting people my daughter who's living with me now through this virus is just trying to walk in. I apologize.
No, that's okay. We've all been there.
That's right. All of humanity's showing up. So, but the bottom line is what you're really getting at is, and this will be the pace at which we will come back, is how we're able to restore confidence, right, in the ability for people to feel comfortable and safe in their workplace. And one of the comments that we were hearing from some of our small businesses here in New Jersey is they want government to lead and give them the framework for how they and the guidelines for how they create safe workplaces, because right now for many of the small businesses, and I mean really truly small business like Main Street mom and pop stores, right, they don't have a department that some of our large Fortune 500 companies where they've got people who are working on these issues and trying to develop plans for reentry or restarting. And then on the other side, on the consumption side, which we said consumption is about 2/3 of national income, right, people have to feel comfortable that they have a job, that their income is being restored, that there's a bridge to this, to the other side here. And so they have that money to where they then restore the confidence that they will purchase goods and not just groceries.
Sure.
Not just groceries.
And Bill, is that a baby or a cat behind you?
That
there?
Is a Sphinx cat. That's my daughter's cat.
Just checking.
I'm sure her meow is sort of, it actually seems rather appropriate for this
it
discussion.
Sure
I think
does.
It sounds concerned and caring. And also we have lots of listeners on the line. So let me go to another call. Let's go to Jeff in Dallas, Texas. Hi, Jeff.
Great program. I'm 90 years old, and I lived through England in World War II. And at that time, we had good government, no corruption, and the government cooperated with private industry, and they directed everybody to work. And the war over there lasted 6 years, actually 10 years, because England was bankrupt after the war. America's got a tremendous advantage. They're not bankrupt. They're very wealthy. If the government was to direct people to work, shorten the work week, say to 30 hours, put everybody to work, and instead of spending money on arms and ammunition, spending it on hospitals and rebuilding the infrastructure, but all this would depend on a good government directing people and people being willing to accept this particular situation.
Well, okay. Jeff, thanks for sharing your perspective. And it's great to hear. 90 years old, lived through World War II. I mean, Bill Rogers, what are the prospects that our government is going to launch something like what Bill is recommending in terms of just government programs, large-scale government programs to get people back to work? I mean, it seems like we're having trouble even getting the Heroes Act heard, as you said.
Right. I think the answer to his comment is really one question is one of, right, how long is this going to last? Right, if we get into this, go through the summer, and things are still really, really, the unemployment rate really has not fallen, participation rates haven't risen, that we hopefully do not, but we have a spike up because we have a beautiful weekend here in New Jersey in the Mid-Atlantic, and we're trying to start do some partial openings. But if people don't maintain their physical distance, right, we could have another spike, which then basically makes us take another step back.
You know what, Bill? So, we got to leave it there. And my thanks. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. On America Amplified. I knew I was going to say that. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for this hour of America Amplified, Life, Community, and COVID-19. Listen back to this episode at americaamplified.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's show was produced by Debbie Builder and Susan Britton. Special thanks to WABE in Atlanta and KCUR in Kansas City for working together to bring these voices from across the country to your public radio station. Thanks also to the team at America Amplified, a community engagement initiative supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Our technical director is Chris Pruitt. Our coordinating producer and director is Andrea Tudhope. Our executive producer is John Haas. The conversation doesn't end here. I'm Marty Moscowane from WHYY in Philadelphia.
And I'm Mina Kim from KQED in San Francisco. This is America Amplified.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.